Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Rock'em Nation Podcasts. My name is Sam Snelling. I'm your host for this episode of Dive Cuts. We are on season three. This is episode two. Starting off the month of September with a brand new episode of Dive Cuts. Hope everybody has enjoyed getting to know Nate Edwards and the vocal side of Mitch Hill on our other two football podcasts. But we're going to talk some basketball today because I know that it's been a while since we've done a basketball podcast. With me, as usual, with the Dive Cuts podcast is my friend, my co-host, and gallivanter around the land, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well, Sam. It's been a while, but it's good that we've come together to try and distract people from what happened over the weekend.
What did happen?
If that's even possible. I enjoyed very good beer in Chicago and a lovely wedding and, you know, not having access to a television as apparently the fan base melted down. So that it was really great for me on Saturday night. It was like being in a, trying to think of the right, in a panic room of sorts. A well-stocked, drunk panic room.
I cut the grass twice.
I mean, that's...
Very eventful weekend for me.
Your yard is big, though. I mean, your yard really does require double mowing to truly get the care it needs.
Well, yeah, and I cut it before we went to Nashville, and we came back from Nashville, and apparently St. Louis had a bunch of rain, so my grass was extra long. And it was so long that I cut... So my front yard is mostly, like, shaded, and so I really only have to... I probably get away with cutting that about once a month. But the backyard was kind of out of control. So I cut that on the highest setting and then 2 days later had to lower the mower and do the entire yard. So it was good. It was hot and kind of got the demons out, cast off the Mizzou football demons. And we are ready for week two. But you and I are not here to talk about week two. We are here to talk about a very... important visit coming up this weekend, which we will get to in a minute. But let's kind of go over a little bit of some Mizzou recruiting stuff. We've had some movement. The board, as we know, it is thinning out. For those who are on Twitter, they were shocked to find out that Chaminade St. Louis product, Luke Kasubke, decided to commit to a school not named Missouri. It was the Kansas State Wildcats ended up getting the services of Mr. Kasubke. Matt, any thoughts on that?
Luke Kasubke's recruitment had sort of trended away from Missouri probably over the last 6 months. You know, Missouri checked in intermittently last fall and through Chaminade's season. Illinois did too, but you could kind of get the sense that he was kind of a middle-of-the-board type of guy, even though he was an early offer in the class. Just never really, I think, elbowed his way into like kind of that, you know, top upper echelon there. I always thought, and we've discussed before, that, you know, if the roster composition was a little bit different and the needs were a little bit different, he was a guy that, you know, you and I both thought would be a really great fit. Just, you know, circumstances and timing didn't go that way. Missouri's got plenty of shooting and plenty of wings kind of stockpiled right now. And the wings they were chasing are, you know, elite top end of the market type of guys in Cam Fletcher and Josh Christopher. So it just seemed like there wasn't necessarily, you know, a need for kind of a four-year guy. Missouri's got plenty of those on the roster right now. I'd heard from the beginning that, you know, Kansas State and Xavier, you know, were kind of the programs that stuck out. Xavier filled some slots and fell away. Loyola Chicago stepped into the void. SLU had been omnipresent there and trying to make its presence felt. That staff is continuing to work hard. But realistically, you know, once Xavier fell off the board and we saw kind of some other high majors hesitate to jump in, I always thought that K-State was probably going to be the likely destination. And he took an official visit last weekend and didn't wait long to officially hop on board. So a really, really great player. I think if you can get out and see Chaminade this year, watch Kasubke. I think he's overbuilt as a spot-up shooter. He's a really, really complete guy, can do a little bit of everything. And just plays with a good chip on his shoulder and a bunch of tenacity. So he's a really, really great player to watch. So a good pickup, I think, for Bruce Weber and those guys out to the West.
Yeah, I really feel like the Wildcats are doing a good job of that. I think he's built a sustainable program at this point. They're able to kind of get guys that are going to be four-year program guys. And I think Kasubke really kind of fits into that mold. Where, you know, I agree with you. I think, you know, Missouri had their sights a little higher for this class. But I think largely because they didn't need anyone to kind of come in and be a four-year wing in this class. They needed somebody who was either going to be a difference maker, or they needed, you know, Torrance Watson and Javon Pickett to sort of fill out in those roles. So, you know, I think it makes sense that Missouri maybe didn't pursue him. And I also, I think it makes a lot of sense that he picked Kansas State. And I really think he's going to be a good four-year player. It might be a couple years for him to really kind of feel his impact, but I think that's a guy that's going to make a lot of big shots for them. He is a complete player, but he's a shot maker. And I think that's one of the things that is one of the things I like about like Torrance Watson is I think Watson is a shot maker and somebody who's going to, you know, be able to space the floor, but also, you know, attack and be available offensively in more ways than one. But we also knew that this was kind of coming down the pipe, and the Tigers were out. But the interesting part of the visit was that Davion Bradford, who is another big Missouri target, who is coming in a couple weeks. Was on the visit with Kasubke, has not committed. We don't expect Bradford to commit anywhere until he's taken his visits. But Missouri's up next for him, and I know and you know that this is kind of a prime target for Consuel Martin and his staff.
Yeah, I think we've slowly, I think, kind of developed the sense that Caleb Love, an elite top end of the market, either point guard or wing, is what they're hunting for. And then just given, you know, what Jeremiah Tillman's done in terms of, you know, giving hints that he obviously wanted to go explore his pro prospects, you know, aside from a paperwork snafu, you know, it seems like the writing on the wall is that Tillman will be looking to explore his prospects next year. You don't know if Axel Okongo is a 1 or a 2 year guy yet. I can't recall seeing whether that's been worked out or not, or if there's any sort of resolution on that.
Well, he is listed as on the online roster as a junior. So, I mean, at this point, I'm willing to sort of say that he's a junior, and if we find out different, then we'll adapt.
So at minimum, you will lose Reed Nico, and it would probably be a reasonable bet that Jeremiah Tillman's going to decamp. So you're going to need to fill the center spot, and they've been aggressive with Davion Bradford. They've also been aggressive in pursuing Ryan Kalkbrenner, but we have not seen visits for Kalkbrenner yet. I know he went to Purdue a couple weeks ago, and kind of checked out what was in West Lafayette. It seems like the inevitability of him to Illinois has sort of shifted away, and there's a little bit more consideration of other suitors there. But really, for Bradford, it's going to be K-State, Missouri, and I think SLU are going to be the programs that are going to be there in the mix. Again, Chris Lowry and Bruce Weber laid a really, really good early foundation with Bradford. Not that Missouri didn't, but K-State was a little bit earlier in the door there. They've made him a priority. Missouri has made him a priority. I think that the one thing that they like is that they're still going to feature a big in their system. We'll get to this when we talk about C.J. Moore's piece, but Missouri's playing at a controlled tempo. They're, going to try and spread out the floor with shooters and have some versatility and give ball movement, but they're not going to play a big out of their system. So there's a good fit there for Bradford to come in. I think he's a guy whose conditioning is improved. So it's really going to come down to what schematically, where he fits with K-State and Missouri. I think both staffs have done a really, really great job making him a priority. It'll just be interesting to see kind of what the fit winds up being and sort of where that winds up in the calculus.
But neither of us really expect, Bradford to commit during or shortly after his visit. I think this is something that's probably going to drag, and not drag a long time. I think something probably we should know maybe by early or mid-October.
Yeah, that's kind of the timeline I think we're going to be on. I think, I've heard that, from pretty reasonable sources that he's going to take all of his visits and, sit down at the end of this and kind of go back through everything with people in his circle and make a decision. So that can be a good or a bad thing, but, Chris Hollander and Konzo Martin have done a really, really great job here in making him a priority. Bruce Weber and Chris Lowry have done a great job. I think you and I would agree, two really just good staffs, good people on both staffs. So it's, I think whichever direction he goes, he's going to be, at least going to a place where the coaching staff is going to care about him and really, I think, have his, best intentions at heart.
Yeah, so in the old Big 12 days, SB Nation, Rock'em Nation, and Bring on the Cats, which is the Kansas State SB Nation site, had something called the Unholy Alliance, which they basically joined forces in hating Kansas. Was kind of the joke, and they would put this so-called Unholy Alliance on hold when it came time to play each other. And I almost feel like a little bit of a kinship with Kansas State, because if you look at least the basketball program.
Whole lot of Purdue influence in programs.
Yeah, there's a lot of Purdue influence. You talked about it. Like the quality of people that are on the staff. I mean, Chris Lowry was around St. Louis a lot when he was at SIU Carbondale. And that was when I was at Webster. And he was a very well-known presence and really well-liked guy. Always wanted to take the time out for high school coaches and whether or not it was just talking scheme or players or whatever, like he was always willing to kind of take that time out. And so I think he gets some of that from his mentor, which is Bruce Weber. And I think those two guys are just really stand-up guys. And I think if you root for success of good people, I think you root for the Kansas State Wildcats to have some success. Not at the expense of Missouri. I want to be clear on that. I hope Missouri wins all the recruiting battles, but I would say with the experiences that guys like Xavier Sneed have had, you know, some other St. Louis guys, you know, that have been up and down that program over the years, I think there's a lot of reason to sort of say, hey, like, this is a good place. And so Luke Kasupke is going there. We wish him all the best, and I hope he has a great career. Hopefully Missouri beats out K-State for Davion Bradford. But if not, I think losing him to Kansas State, he's at least, you know, he's going to a good place with good people.
Yeah.
So we have just a couple other recruiting notes. We were kind of talking a little bit about Josh Christopher offline, and I know this is, there's some contention. I mean, I think he and his father are being fairly upfront in what their plans are, but while they're being upfront, it's still kind of murky. And I think there's some confusion as to whether or not he's coming to Missouri for the Florida football game or the Florida basketball game. I actually like the idea of him like drawing this thing out. I think that'd be smart for Josh to, because I think most people know that, you know, probably Kentucky is the top choice. However, Kentucky has a lot of dudes on the roster and not a lot of like surefire one and done. So if all those dudes are going to be on the roster next year, then, you know, Josh isn't going to be playing 30 to 35 minutes a game. He's probably going to be, you know, fighting it out for 17, 18 minutes a game. So I think that's maybe something and that I could see happening is him sort of being patient, knowing that he's in a very sort of strong position, that if he wants to go to Missouri, Missouri will make sure that there's a spot available for him. And I think you could say the same thing for Arizona State. You could probably say the same thing for the other two schools who are in his list, which was UCLA and Michigan. You know, and really Kentucky too. Like if they really want Josh and Josh wants to wait until spring, and, you know, Cal, I don't think he ever really uses 13 scholarships, but if they didn't have a scholarship, I'm sure he could find a way to get one.
Coaches always find ways to make room.
Yeah. Yeah, and really, like, there's plenty of dudes on the roster that you could be like, hey, like, you know, I'll sign off on a runoff if you want to transfer, but you're not going to play here next year because this guy wants to come in and he's a lot better.
Yeah, at this point with Christopher, I think it'll be interesting if it is when, you know, at least. And I can't say I have insight here. I've only spoken to his dad once or twice. So I don't want to stand up here and pretend that I have any great insight into what the process is here. But in every forum, he's always lauded Martin. He's always lauded the idea of, you know, having somebody they trust in Columbia. So I think that that can't be discounted. But, you know, he's also said, you know, Josh is going to spend time in, you know, Tempe seeing his brother. You know, they are going to go out and do, you know, Big Blue Madness, and there's going to be some guys that he is close with there with him for that weekend in October. So it's, the question is, you know, what advantage relative to anything else can him dragging the process out give Missouri? So if this goes into spring and he can wait and see that, you know, Kentucky and see what Kentucky does, relative to that, what does Missouri get out of this process being extended? And, you know, is it that they can, you know, put together an NCAA tournament run and sort of now have a concrete result to pitch? That to me would seem like the biggest boon potentially for Missouri is to say, look, you know, there not only are there ample minutes here and somebody you know, you will come into a roster and be the catalyst to push this program forward.
Right.
Is it, that to me would seem to be the biggest benefit to this thing dragging itself out. Will that ultimately be the play here? I don't know. If he's coming into November for a Florida football game, you know, maybe that's, if he gets that far, maybe, you know, the visit to Kentucky and some other visits get further in the rearview mirror. Maybe Missouri's got some commitments on board to sort of say, hey, here's what kind of the future nucleus is going to look like for you. That would maybe be another relative advantage here. I tend to think that what Missouri has to do is also find a way to sort of, you know, show a completeness there to the pitch outside of, hey, you have family here. Is there something that they can do to enhance the overall, you know, state of where the program is? So that's not really well phrased, but that's just sort of where my head's at in terms of wondering whether or not it's beneficial for this thing to stay in fall or get dragged out in, you know, another 6 months.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I tend to think that the best sort of case scenario for Missouri is that, you know, the bulk of Kentucky's wings have good years, but nothing that's going to send them into the league. And they have a bunch of guys returning. Josh is waiting to the spring. Missouri has an NCAA tournament year. They kind of look like a team that's like one wing score away, and that becomes the pitch. Like, hey, like we could be as good as, if not better than Kentucky, if you come here. I think that's got to be the best case scenario for the Tigers. But I actually don't think that Josh Christopher is the prime target in this class. I think that's Caleb Love, and Caleb Love will be on campus this weekend.
Yes, he will. And we will see what that does to change sort of the state of play there. I think this has kind of become Missouri, Louisville, and North Carolina, and just North Carolina right now kind of sitting in the driver's seat for a lot of reasons we've talked about. You know, Coby White is a good prime example of what can happen. You know, if Roy plugs in the type of freshman that Caleb Love is to his system, you know, if everything breaks right, you're a lottery pick. If not, you get 2 to 3 years to, you know, pilot a really fun open court offense and play in big games and play for a major program. Louisville is in the mix for Jay Scrubb, big-time JUCO prospect, I think out of John A. Logan College is where he's from.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Or where he's, yeah, so just over in Illinois. If Scrub winds up,
hey, Missouri is in that top 10 too.
Missouri is in that top 10. Missouri is in that top 10. Sorry to negate that fact, but if Scrub opts for Louisville, does that sort of, you know, rule them out as an option? I'm not sure if, you know, what that does if he's only looking to stick around a year before jumping to earn a paycheck. You know, what does that do in terms of, you know, Caleb's impression of the opportunity there? Missouri's been ever present. They're going to be there. They're going to pitch him on giving him the keys to the program. He's, you know, been to Columbia 3 or 4 times already. You know, he knows what's on the table there. So it'll just be interesting to see what Missouri does this time around and what sort of the goal or the end goal of this visit is. But hey, it's always good to get a visit than not get a visit. And I think, as we've seen, Indiana is kind of filling up some spots right now. So we'll see, you know, kind of what the state of play is over the next month. But, you know, what are your sort of expectations, or what do you think should be the mindset for folks as he gets ready to come in this weekend?
Well, really, like, this is one of those things that I think, you know, both you and I have sort of talked about in private a lot. And really, you sort of feel a little bit of a, I don't want to say momentum, but there's something about the interest in Missouri that seems to exist a lot stronger, and maybe has for a while, than most of like the national prognosticators seem to believe. I tend to look at it as something where, you know, the family knows that Konzo has put in the work and he's done a good job of building a good sales pitch. And they're pitching a system that I think really does sort of cater to a lot of the things that Caleb does well. The results maybe puts Missouri a little bit of a hole compared to some of the other schools they're going up against. But really, I posted about this recently, about sort of having a coach that kind of knows what he's doing. And I think that's the main takeaway that you get when you look at the fact that Missouri secured the official visit with Love, despite the fact that, you know, he released a top six, and the thought was, oh, like, he could just do an unofficial to Missouri. Well, no, he's taking an official visit to Missouri because Martin is really working hard to pitch Caleb as sort of being the guy that they want, the guy that they want the most. And he's done a really good job of that for, like, the last, you know, probably 2 years of selling Caleb on the program and the direction of the program. You know, and I think it's worked. Like I said, I don't necessarily know that this ends up with Caleb Love committing to Missouri. Like, I think that there's just a lot of factors that are going into it. And Caleb's a smart kid. His family, and, you know, they're not, you know, prone to being overwhelmed by one thing or another. They're going to make a smart, sound decision and most likely do what's best for Caleb. And that is a difficult pitch, but when you're comparing Missouri to North Carolina, you're comparing Missouri to Louisville. You know, but Konza Martin is selling, you know, Caleb on being a bit of a linchpin and what this program can sort of become. And I think that that there's some real interest in that. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say that I feel, you know, good that Caleb is going to end up at Missouri or anything like that. Like, I still think that, you know, they're a little bit behind maybe a couple of those other schools, but I do think they're ahead of, you know, Kansas. I think they're ahead of Arizona, and I think they're ahead of Indiana. And I think the other two it might be a little bit tougher, but we'll see, we'll find out. And hopefully this will get wrapped up in the fall period, which I think it will.
Yeah. I think everyone's on track to, you know, setting aside the hypothetical with Christopher, I think the board mostly sets up for fall decisions, and we're seeing a lot of guys come off the board a little bit earlier. You know, sometimes we don't see as many commitments in July and August as we've seen, but I think the one thing that sort of happened is now that juniors can take visits, official visits, earlier, and they can, you know, see more campuses and the numbers not capped, I think guys are able to get a much earlier sense of where they want to be. Those relationships can, you know, be cemented earlier. So I tend to think we're going to have an idea about what the class looks like in the fall. And I also think you kind of, you know, look at the spring as an opportunity now for where Missouri is going to go work the transfer market if they need to. That's, you know, I guess, you know, what the ideal scenario would be is you get one or two commitments in the fall. You sort of plan on maybe there being an open scholarship in spring. And if there is, you sort of work the transfer market and see what you can do with that. So
it's a solid plan.
That's kind of, yeah, that's what happens when you have a competent staff managing the roster. There are logical decisions that get made. So, you know, I think in the next couple months, obviously, there's going to be a resolution, and we'll just see what the end result is.
So, I think as we pivot out of that, we should pivot into something that is more about this season and the players that are currently on the roster. Does that sound like a decent idea?
Yeah. There are 13 guys who currently have scholarships and are practicing and will play 30 basketball games this winter. 31 games, pardon me. They will play 31 games.
It's exciting. So our good friend and friend of the pod, as we like to say, CJ Moore, posted a really nice article, sort of analyzing the Missouri basketball program as it is and its prospects this season. And CJ came away with a bit of a take that is more in line with where you and I are and a little bit of out of line with a lot of the national writers and those sort of types. And CJ's been on the pod before. We plan on having him on the pod again, probably next month. But the thing that I always like about CJ is he's able to sort of present his argument, back it up with data, and give you a really well-rounded idea of why he thinks the way that he does. And I also like it because I tend to agree with his position, which is Missouri should be pretty good this year.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I do think CJ gets at that's really important here is that there are a lot of kind of unknowns with this roster, you know, and I think part of it's you know, there have been catastrophic injuries the past couple of years. You know, last season, you know, Jeremiah Tillman, arguably the most important piece of the roster, was still battling foul trouble. They lost their best perimeter players 19 games in the season, or only their Mark Smith only played 19 games last year. Jonte Porter was lost in the preseason, and so there's just, if you're just looking at the body of work from last year, there might be some context missing there, and you really have to kind of, as we've done, or tried to do, is really kind of dig in and sort of look at the context around what that 15-17 record is, and you can, you know, see that, you know, Drew Smith was not on the floor. That's a huge piece that might be one of the best transfer prospects on the market a couple of years ago. Nobody has seen him play. You know, what happens if you have Tillman, you know, finally playing, you know, consistent minutes? What happens if Mark Smith is healthy? You know, the freshmen each showed flashes at stretches last year. What happens if they can all kind of carve out consistent roles? So there's reasons to be optimistic there, but you can't point to anything concrete in the body of work from last year and say, yeah, this is why the team should be better. And I think CJ did a really nice job of presenting sort of the conundrum that comes out of that. And, you know, if everything breaks right, this could be a really good team. But, you know, will that happen? So that, I guess that was my sort of takeaway, is can the Tigers sort of answer a whole lot of if statements and put together the kind of year that we think they're capable of?
So what it sounds to me like you're saying, and I think this is one of those things that we kind of agree on, is while there are kind of a lot of ifs with this team, there's enough room for, if maybe the majority of those ifs kind of break towards the Tigers, that we're going to have a really good basketball team. It's easy to see why a ranking system like Bart Torvik's is so high in the Tigers, but I also don't necessarily like not see why so many people are down on them. And I think that that's sort of the flexibility of not just where Missouri is right now, but also the SEC, where there are so many unknowns as we're kind of coming into the season, and what you can kind of expect from Missouri or from Alabama or Florida. I mean, there's just a lot of teams that have a lot of question marks, and how many teams can answer those question marks sort of will probably determine how successful they are. And Missouri is right in the middle of all that.
Yeah, I think when I look up and down the pecking order, I look at a team like Alabama as kind of emblematic of what the SEC is this year. They've got three really nice pieces on the perimeter. They've got some, you know, guys along the front line who could be pretty good, you know, parts of a rotation. And they've got a coach now that, you know, should be able to build an offense. And the new coach is Nate Oates, obviously, who should be able to build a system to maximize those, you know, the skill sets that he has. But will he do it? And then you can sort of, I think, point to a lot of teams like that. You know, same with Arkansas, a team that I think not a lot of people are bullish on. I tend to think they could be better than people think because they've got a really good backcourt. But what is Eric Musselman going to do with them? And they're just, you know, Buzz Williams doesn't have, you know, maybe the deepest roster, but you and I both know Buzz Williams can coach his ass off and can motivate guys. You know, can he, you know, find a way to kind of, you know, Rube Goldberg them into the bubble? You know, Georgia's going to have a top three NBA draft pick on the roster. They're going to have Rayshon Hammonds. They're going to have a sneaky solid guard in Jordan Harris, and they're going to have a bunch of young, talented guys on that roster, and Tom Crean can really, you know, craft an elite offense. You know, are they, you know, what are they going to be? Can they get in the mix? So there's just a lot of teams, I think, that have good components, but nobody can really peg what they're going to be right now. And to kind of bring it home and back to where we started, I think that's what hurts Missouri in these debates, is that there's not, you know, three or four guys or three or four proven metrics you can point to and say, yeah, this is why Missouri is going to be a bubble team. And I don't think that's laziness on the part of some national writers outside of a CBS analyst. But I do think that, you know, there are guys around the SEC, you know, who you know, skepticism is a little bit warranted there, and maybe we're obviously a little bit more bullish, but I do see, you know, probably because I'm myopic and I dig into the stuff way too much, a case for Missouri to be a team that's going to finish between 6th and 10th in the standings and is going to be right there for a bubble bid. So if, you know, is that, you know, what Missouri conceives of for itself? I don't know, but I think that that's a pretty good place to be in year three, given where this program started when Martin took the job.
Yeah, I think that the, and another thing that I think is often sort of easy to maybe overlook is Drew Smith. It would seem to me that most everybody in the program and on staff at Missouri is really high on what Drew Smith is going to be able to provide for the program. You know, but the reality is he's a player who came from a team that wasn't very good, that was down a level. You know, so, you know, playing on a bad team in the Valley, he wasn't a guy who was sort of seen and probably right now still isn't seen as an impact level player. But I think Missouri believes that he is. And I think all the guys on the roster really talk about him like he is. And CJ made the point that he thinks he is. And I think you and I think he is. And I think that's right there to me is probably the biggest difference is people are probably looking at like, oh, you know, they had Jordan Geist who was a nice player and they lose him. You know, but maybe Drew Smith can kind of come in with a similar level of production. Everybody else steps up their game and, you know, and then you have something that's kind of worthwhile and worth watching.
Yeah, and the last point I think people need to keep in mind on Smith is he was hurt, I think, pretty much over the last third of the season for Evansville. You know, Marty Simmons has, you know, said that he thought he had a potential Valley Player of the Year until injuries got in the way. You look at the defensive metrics, you look at the on-off metrics. If Drew Smith is healthy, he's probably steadily in the mix, you know, for a major honor out of that conference. And I think it would be different if Missouri was bringing in an all Missouri Valley player, or bringing in a defensive player of the year from the Missouri Valley, or, you know, maybe even a player of the year out of the Valley. So I think that in a weird way, injuries have sort of also sapped the appropriate amount of buzz from what Smith can bring to the fold here. But you and I, from what we've seen on film and all the metrics we look at, are really high on what he can be. And it's kind of reassuring to hear, you know, the program and the players inside of it, you know, being so vocal about what they expect from him. So that's another bit of confirmation, you know, to what we've been able to see.
Well, you and I made a promise to keep this to 30-40 minutes. We are butting up at 39 minutes on my timer. I know we had some audio issues which may extend this a little longer, but as usual, you get you and me together talking basketball, we tend to go a little long.
You know, we can't help ourselves. I'm not going to say anything else. We're up against time here.
But make sure that you are subscribed to Rock'em Radio. You'll get all of our new family of podcasts. Head over to the iTunes store and please rate. Give us good ratings. The audio issues have been cleared up for the other podcasts, so please don't downgrade us for those. And I think I will be back next week, probably without you, Matt. No offense. Now that we're getting closer, we will do this more often. But I still want to kind of break it up a little bit because there's only so much you can talk about, with Mizzou basketball in the month of September. So it might be a couple of weeks before you and I get back together. Until then, we should have a new, Before the Box Score coming tomorrow night from Nate Edwards, and Fifth Down coming after the West Virginia game. So until then, I'll be back next week with more basketball podcasts. And until then.